Hello and welcome to episode number 24 of the Bouncing Back podcast with me, James Middleton. It's been a hot minute, but I am back and I'm looking forward to getting these podcasts up and running again. I've been traveling around a lot. I met a woman, basically. That's why I have been traveling so much, because she is American and she lives in America. Her name is Shannon, as I'm sure lots of you will know. And that is the reason why I've been away from this microphone in my house in London, because I'm in a long distance relationship now and never thought I would be, but this is long distance. We have an entire ocean between us and a 6-hour time zone. But I won't get into too much detail about that, because those of you who follow me will know enough about it. But we're here to talk about alcohol and being sober curious, because this is the podcast that I wanted to start with first, because over the last 6 to 8 months, I would say, I have become a lot more sober curious and a lot more aware of alcohol and seen some of the benefits that it's had in my life from significantly reducing it. But before I get into talking about it today, I just want to make it abundantly clear that I'm not going to be the person that's going to be preaching to you that you shouldn't drink alcohol or tell you what you should and shouldn't do, especially because I don't want to be that self-righteous twat. You know, we all know someone who at some point has stopped doing something for a very short period of time and they brag about how good they're feeling. Like, you know, they're on this high horse, you know, for example, someone stopping drinking coffee, let's just say, or it could even be alcohol, and they walk around on their high horse with their nose turned up telling everyone, oh, I don't drink coffee anymore, I don't actually drink alcohol, did you know it's not very good for you, I'm feeling so pure, I wake up and I'm fresh, and I'm far better without it, and you should try it, God, life changing, I don't recognise me anymore, new person, don't worry, I'm not going to be that guy. I will still probably drink in my life, just a significant amount less than what I used to drink, because I've had my eyes opened a lot over this past 6 to 8 months, as with a lot of things in my life, you know, like the media and the government and COVID jabs and a lot of this realization in the world, which has brought a lot of new truths to me. And it's quite a refreshing position to be in. And I think actually the growth that's happened in the last 6 to 8 months on a personal level, I am just becoming a lot more aware of things. So I'm here to discuss my own journey with alcohol and the reasons why I've come to these realizations. And I want to share this with you just so then perhaps it can open your eyes a bit and at least get you thinking. That's what most of my podcasts are here for, to get you thinking and for you to then make up your own decision on how you use alcohol in your life and how you consume it. And there are lots of fascinating stats that I'm going to be sharing with you that I've researched, that I've listened to from some amazing podcasts and scientists and neuroscientists. It's not going to be, don't worry, it's not going to be too jargony or kind of intense, but you know, from some of the top guys in the health industry. And I'm sure some of these stats will shock you, but it's all just really interesting stuff. And who knows, maybe it'll change your perspective, maybe it won't, but let's find out. So I want to start this to talk about, I guess, my relationship with alcohol. And I'm going to talk about from when I was younger and growing up to kind of through my 20s, because I'm sure a lot of you will be able to relate to this. And I'm going to present it as just a normal 29-year-old man sitting here talking about his experience with alcohol and why now I've, you know, turned over a new leaf, I think. And like I said, my relationship with alcohol, I had this kind of switch in my head. I think it was like the middle of last year. It was just one of those classic cases. I woke up one morning having drunk copious amounts of alcohol the night before. I think it was because I was celebrating something. And usually, like most people, I imagine, I drink more alcohol than I should if it's a celebration, particularly if it's a good celebration. The bad celebrations, I will probably stay quite sober. But I will never, like, given this, the sort of, I mean, that's always been my mindset with alcohol. I'll drink when there's an occasion and a celebration. I've never been the kind of person to sit on my sofa on a Tuesday evening and drink two or three glasses of wine by myself or with my girlfriend or with a friend. It's just never been me. My relationship with alcohol has always been a very all or nothing relationship, which actually in itself is incredibly unhealthy. I'm either getting absolutely sloshed or I'm not touching it at all. And you'll probably hear a couple of different terms of getting drunk, but sloshed is one of them. If you don't know that term, it's quite a fun one. I've always been like that. And that's probably, well, I'd say first, probably why I'm now more not touching it at all. But secondly, and probably worse, because of the binging type culture that I've been very much enthralled in for most of my life. Well, most of my 20s. And I'd say even my late teens, actually, because I started drinking. And this is appalling, James. I started drinking when I was 13 years old, I think, 14 years old. I know, terrible. But it was mainly because of the, and this is the irony, it's mainly because of the high level sport I played growing up. And even as a teenager, after a game of rugby, we'd go and illegally buy beers from some of the older boys, or they would sell us beers and get drunk. And they were selling us beers for £5. I mean, what an idiot I was back then, buying a beer for a fiver at the age of 13. Things we do when we're young. Now, I would never drink other than on weekends or after a rugby game. And it was always that thing of being highly disciplined during the week and when I wasn't drinking. But then you'd go out and you'd absolutely blow the doors off. There's another term for you, blow the doors off, when you did drink. And the issue is, especially within the rugby culture, it's predicated around drinking. From schoolboy level all the way up to men's rugby, the drinking culture is enormous, especially in the UK. I remember at university, and I've spoken about this in my very first podcast, actually, where I was about 20 years old. No, I was 19 years old, and I had this rugby initiation, which is a kind of a welcome into the team. I had no idea what to expect. I knew I'd be drinking lots of alcohol, but oh my God, this was different gravy. This was something I have never experienced, and still to this day, have never experienced in my entire life. Listen, this is just insane. Listen to this. We would drink 3 bottles of wine on the way back from an away fixture. That was 25 minutes away. 3 bottles of wine in 25 minutes. It was called the Tricolore. Very clever. So a bottle of red, a bottle of white, and a bottle of rosé. And it was always the shortest away game that the youngest players had to do this. And I was one of the youngest players in my team then. So I drank 3 bottles of wine in 25 minutes. If I did that today, I'd be in hospital. I mean, I don't know how I did it back then. Can you imagine the state that I was in, though, when I got off that bus? I couldn't see straight. And I would then go home. This is the worst part. I would then go home, have a few sips of water, probably brush my teeth, you know, because I'd think that would get me into the club when the bouncer looks at my ID rather than my cross-eyed eyes. And then I went out. I went out that night and I probably had another 4, 5, 6 drinks in the club and got home at 2 a.m. And I'd wake up the next morning. Guess what? My bed's soaking wet. Yep, I pissed the bed. I was on a different planet. I couldn't speak. It was probably the worst month of drinking in my entire life. And that happened for weeks. So throughout that month, I remember coming home. Every Wednesday, we'd play a game of rugby. After a game, and after having been out, I was the youngest player in the team. So I always, whether it was that, the Tricolore, or some other game they made up, I just got absolutely plied with booze. And I'd wake up for a month every Thursday morning with a wet bed. Because I wet the bed. Because I've gotten so drunk. And that's not a good sign. Like for a 19-year-old, like I'm not embarrassed to talk about it now because it was so long ago. But to this day, I still think, gosh, like, what was my body thinking? And like, imagine the process my body was going through of me consuming that much alcohol. And it kind of seemed normal. Not normal, but I mean, that's a slight exaggeration. But I tell my mates, I remember at uni at the time, and they would just laugh. And they'd say, oh yeah, we've all been there. And it was just absurd. I was just, and not wetting the bed as a 19-year-old rugby player. Anyway, I left university and I went into working in the city in a 9-to-5 job. And by the way, I'm kind of painting a picture of my first-hand experience of society, I guess, as a young guy in my 20s, and my relationship with alcohol before I get into talking about all the effects alcohol has on us, because that is honestly really interesting and the bit I think that will hopefully hit you the hardest. But so I'm in my 9-to-5 job, okay, I'm 23, 24 years old, and although the drinking wasn't as heavy, granted I wasn't weeing the bed, I was still drinking on a Thursday night, Friday night, and a Saturday night, easy, three nights a week. You know, Thursday, looking at maybe 4 to 5 pints of beer, Friday, maybe 6 or 7 pints, and then a Saturday, probably more than that, but, you know, you throw your vodkas in there, your tequilas, your Jägerbombs, all that nonsense. And you'd wake up on a Sunday feeling like absolute ass, so hungover. And then you're sort of groveling on a Sunday. Monday comes around, I'm feeling very depressed because the, you know, alcohol is a depressant and that all that kicks in. So, you know, I don't want to be at work on a Monday and I'm questioning my life. Tuesday, then I'm feeling tired, but I'm not depressed anymore. Wednesday, then I start feeling normal again. Okay, yeah. Thursday comes around, good as new, start the whole process again on that wheel. And I remember going round and round that conveyor belt for months. For months and months, and thought to myself, like, is this it? Is this what the world is like? Is this what it is like to be living in London, working in a job, a good job in the city, and how I'm spending my life, just been like drinking alcohol and just getting wrecked on the weekends and feeling terrible and then just waiting for myself to come around again and doing it all over again? It just seemed to me that everyone around me was doing it as well, right? And on that basis, it was normal. And I guess when you work in a 9-to-5 job, Monday to Friday, you don't have any responsibilities on the weekend. I mean, particularly when you're 24 years old, I had nothing to do on the weekends other than just chill and see my mates. So it doesn't matter if I was lying on the sofa for the entirety of a Saturday and a Sunday doing absolutely nothing other than eating crap food and trying to hydrate myself enough so that I could go out and drink again. And that was my life for a good year and a half, I'd say. And of course, you know, I was going to the gym every morning before work, and I was still, in that respect, keeping fit and healthy. But it was just this period over the weekend which would have just undone so much of that. Now, I look back at those times in my life and I can fully understand and see why I did it. It's because it was deemed, quotation marks, normal, and almost like it's like a rite of passage, I guess. I was immersed in a culture where everyone else was doing it with me, from university to work in London, and it was the done thing. And I still to this day look around if I'm out with my friends and I'm not drinking or I'm having only one or two drinks. I look around me and I think there is such a normalized drinking culture in our society today, particularly in the UK, but not just in the UK. I mean, I've traveled all over the world. Everywhere you go in the world, drinking is a big part of it. Obviously not in the Middle East. And I know it differs from country to country, but I know that in Europe there's a big drinking culture. I know in Australia too. I know in America people drink. I don't think it's as, like, the binge culture is as big, but definitely, you know, just casual drinking during the week. And I mean, yeah, so that's actually a really interesting point. And I don't know why. I did notice that when I was with Shannon in America, instead of getting drunk on the weekends and that pub culture that we have in the UK, it's very much a kind of, you know, have a couple of drinks here or a couple of drinks there, but still, you know, consuming a fair amount of alcohol. And of course, there'll be pockets of people that do binge drink, you know, in these different places. But I look back and like I said, I can see why I did it, because everyone around me was doing it. So it felt like it was normal, and I think this is the thing. Like, I didn't want to be the guy that said, no, I'm not drinking, or I don't want to be a part of this, actually. I want to have a night off, because then you get all the, oh, mate, come on, let's only just have one beer, just one beer. And then one beer turns to two, and two to three, and then you've had six, and you've wet the bed. But this brings me on to my first, I think, poignant point around alcohol. If you don't drink alcohol, it's like you're the one with the problem. You're the anomaly. You're the one who people don't really understand why you don't drink. And to be honest, maybe can't be totally trusted in the past. When someone said to me, I'm not drinking, I'm always like, ooh, watch out for that. Well, you got to watch out for the non-drinkers. There's always something going on in their life that's not quite right. I mean, how messed up is that? And I find the whole stigma around drinking pretty weird, to be honest. And I read this quote the other day, and this summed it up perfectly. Alcohol is the only drug that you have to justify not using. If someone was to come up to me and say, hey, James, I'm not going to sniff any cocaine for the next couple of months, and I'm going to try and stop doing it altogether, the response would be, God, that's amazing. Good for you. That's a really positive thing, and I'm really happy that you're doing that in your life. But when you say the same with alcohol, and someone says, I'm not drinking for a month, or I'm giving up alcohol for 6 months, or I'm not going to drink for the whole of this year, people look at you like you're some sort of weirdo, or that you're boring, or that there's a fundamental issue as to why you're doing that. Or I know if you're a woman, people immediately think you're pregnant. Now, one thing that I have noticed, as I think more people know, well, yeah, one thing I've noticed is I think more people are becoming more sober curious. And I think more people are actually reducing the amount of alcohol they are drinking, particularly those like myself who are getting to the stage of their life where they value tomorrow more than the buzz they get from drinking alcohol. That is the number one reason why I personally am making a conscious effort to significantly reduce my alcohol consumption, because I now value tomorrow more than the small buzz that I get from drinking alcohol. Just over the past 6 months, for example, I can probably count on one hand the amount of times that I've had more than 4 or 5 drinks in one evening. And I think for me, it's because I'm 30 this year. Oh, God, turning 30. That's scary. On that note, it's a complete side note, but I had a company DM me on Instagram, a hair loss company, saying, hi, James, just reaching out. Let us know if you need our help with anything. And I was like, oh, guys, these are the DMs you get when you start turning 30. Perfect. My hairline's pretty good, thanks, but I'll consider it. Maybe when I'm 31. I think actually after 30 as a man, you do start losing your hair. So maybe it's down here from hill. So down here from hill? Come on, James. Downhill from here. Anyway, I digress. But I'm turning 30 this year, and waking up every day on this high frequency that I'm currently on is incredible. And it gains so much momentum when you stay on that high frequency. And what I mean by high frequency is you're just kind of like firing on all cylinders, and you're operating at the let's say the peak capacity that you can. So imagine you've got like a little graph, and it's kind of, you know, like one of those physics graphs that goes up and down. And it's not a physics graph. You know what high frequency is. Yeah, okay, I don't have to explain it. And essentially, you're not doing anything to knock you off it. So at the moment, I feel like I'm functioning at my highest capacity, both mentally and physically. When you don't drink alcohol, or at least this is what I found, when you don't drink alcohol, you have so much mental clarity. You have better sleep, you eat healthier, you have more energy, you train better in the gym or wherever you're training, your relationships with people are better, you're more productive, you spend less money. I could go on. And I think that's just the surface. We're not even getting into the depths of your health and physically how your body is operating without alcohol. And actually, on the flip side, how damaging alcohol is to your body and to your cells and to your liver and to your brain, your cognitive function. And I'll get into that in a moment, because some of the things I found and researched and read about are incredibly insightful and fascinating. Even if you do drink, there are some things that I will talk about that you can do to reduce the damaging effects. But when I sit down and I weigh up the pros of drinking and the cons of drinking, to me now, the cons massively outweigh the pros. Now, that being said, because I had this conversation with one of my best mates the other day, who also has significantly reduced their alcohol intake, I have had some of the best nights of my entire life when I have been buzzed on alcohol. I do believe that alcohol can enhance enhance is the wrong word, but make an experience more fun, let's just say. You know, because it initially relaxes you, makes you feel a bit more confident, you know. How many times have you gone up to a hot girl or a hot guy when you've had a little bit of alcohol and you don't care if they say no because you've had that stuff in your system, so you're kind of feeling good about yourself. It's great for getting people to dance and not care about how they look, or, you know, just generally like feel quotation marks free, let's say. I know this because I've been at parties or events where I have been the only sober one. And the first few hours are fine, but then, God, when everyone starts getting more drunk, it is, then you understand why sober people go home early, because everyone starts shouting. And that's the thing, when you drink alcohol, people's awareness of noise levels drop. So that's why everyone starts speaking louder and louder and louder. And also you realize how much crap people talk when they're drunk, and, you know, doing things that are stupid and find really funny, but just aren't funny if you're sober. And you're just, you know, you're not on that level. But if you are on that level, you're having the time of your life. The sober people go home. And you could argue they don't have as much fun when it gets to that stage, which I would agree with. If you're the only sober one and everyone else is drunk around you, it's not as fun. It's just not. You can't argue with that. When sober people say, oh, I have just as much fun as all my drunk friends, I'm like, you don't. It's different. And that's when you end up just hanging out with other sober people and not staying that long at parties where everyone is drunk. And I think that's cool as well. But it's a difficult one. I haven't yet encountered this kind of situation enough. But I think when I do, I'll definitely report back on it and let you know how I coped. I think when you, I guess for me now, I value going to dinner with a friend or going to see a friend and having a deep, meaningful conversation and, you know, not just revolving it around getting drunk and being silly. Like that's the sort of headspace I'm in. And if there is a big party going on, you know, and my friends are there, I will definitely go and I'll see them, but I probably won't drink, or maybe I'll have one or two and then I'll dart out because I want to get up and do stuff the next day. So that's kind of the position of being sober around drunk people. And again, going back to this thing of, like, you know, creating memories and good times, some of my best memories with my mates, and I don't know if this is a sad thing or not, but they have involved alcohol. I have had some of the best nights of my life buzzed off it. And that's where I think, for me, on a personal level, the only time now for the rest of my life that I'm going to drink more alcohol than is medically stated you should. I think the NHS say no more than 5 pints of lager in a week. Although it has been noted by this guy called Andrew Huberman, who's a very well-respected neuroscientist in his field, and he has an incredible podcast on alcohol. He says that 1 to 2 drinks is what you can have a week without then having irreversible damage done to you. But anyway, my view is that if I'm celebrating someone's birthday or an occasion like a wedding or a success or whatever it may be, then I will likely have more than 1 or 2 drinks in that same time frame. Let's say in an evening, I'll probably have, you know, 3, 4, 5 drinks. Who knows? I'm not going to sit here and sort of scribble down on a piece of paper and take that with me and cross it off when I'm there. But you get my gist. So on that basis, I think for me, it's more the fact that I'm past the point now of getting drunk and getting hammered just for the sake of it. You know, when you're not really in control, or you wake up and you've got a massive headache, or you feel tired and all those sorts of things. And again, I don't know if it's an age thing. I don't know if it's just other 29-year-olds and 30-year-olds like me are in the same position. I mean, I would love to know if you guys, you know, please send me a message on Instagram or whatever, and let me know about your own journey with it. I don't know if you're in the same position at this kind of age, and it's more that, you know, you're over just getting drunk and the repercussions of it. I mean, again, bearing in mind, I've literally been drinking alcohol since I was 13 years old. So I've been drinking for 16 years. And in those 16 years, I would say for about 10 of them, excessively. So I'm very much over that hurdle. Right now, as I sit here talking to you, I've never been happier in my entire life. I feel so good physically. I feel so good mentally. I'm so focused on growth in my life, growth with my business, growth with my relationships, personal growth. And I feel like for the first time ever, I've been operating on this high frequency for a sustained period of time, and I'm seeing and reaping the benefits from doing that, which is why now I'm such an advocate of how reducing alcohol in your life can have such a positive impact. I'm not spending my weekends feeling hungover and tired and eating crap food and binge watching Netflix. You know, instead I'm going to bed on time, I'm getting good sleep, I'm waking up early, I'm being productive, I'm socializing with friends, but you know, having those good conversations and quality time, I'm training really well in the gym. And in my downtime, when I do relax, I'm doing things that are good for me and my mental health, because again, the mental health side of things is a massive priority for me now going forward. And again, I have friends who suffer massively from anxiety and stress and get quite down. My first thought is, well, why are you drinking so much alcohol on the weekends? And it's this catch-22, because they're trying to escape from their reality and they're trying to drink to numb any kind of pain and stuff. But then the problem with alcohol is it increases your cortisol levels, and I'll get into this, but it increases your cortisol levels for up to 5 days after you've stopped drinking. So you're stressed, you're even more stressed even when you're not drinking after you've had a drinking period. And so if you suffer from anxiety, that's where it makes it worse for also a longer period of time, not just the day after, but 3, 4, 5 days after. So one of the things I would suggest to my friends who suffers from feeling anxious is reduce the amount of alcohol you're drinking, because that is going to be directly making it worse. Now, some people can very much operate as quotation marks normal after, you know, they've been drinking. And you could even go so far as to say that functioning alcoholics believe that they truly are living their life as normal, because they're performing well at work, their relationships are still good, nothing's being deeply affected. But that doesn't take away from the fact that they are still alcoholics and can't live their life without drinking alcohol. And you'll always get those people, the people who can drink lots and still function. We all know those people who just wake up early the next day and it's like nothing's ever happened. I'm like, what is wrong with you, man? Like, how are you not suffering? How are you not, like, you've just made breakfast for six of us. It's not even 8 a.m. You were dancing on the table with your top off at like 4. Like, I saw you smashing the shots, and they'll go into work, and it's just, I don't get those people. I always think that those people, they can't be operating at their maximum capacity and their highest frequency. And I always think they are, no matter what they tell you, hindering their life and not living life to their full capacity. A bit like highly successful people who are significantly overweight. They may be earning lots of money and running a successful business or businesses, but they won't be performing to their optimum because they are significantly overweight. And that's just a fact. Anyway, I feel like some kind of positive, happy release with my relationship with alcohol. Like, I've finally reached a point in my life where I don't need it, and I'm so comfortable now in a room not drinking whilst everyone else is drinking. And if people say, oh, are you having a drink, do you want a drink, and I just say, yeah, can I have a non-alcoholic beer or a sparkling water, and you know, people look at me and I'm like, cool, what are you looking at, cool, can I get my drink, thanks. No, I'm so comfortable now, and it's nice to reach that level, because in my mid-20s, I could never do that. I would be too conscious of what people were thinking of me. I'd always want to get involved. But I don't care anymore. Because I'm so focused on myself and doing what I know is best for me. And, you know, if people have opinions of me that I'm boring or this or that, then I probably won't hang out with those people. And again, like I said at the beginning of this podcast, I haven't quit drinking for the rest of my life, but I'm just not going to be doing it as much, and I'm very happy with that. Now, I want to get into some of the effects alcohol has on the body. Okay, this is the juicy stuff, and these stats are mostly pulled from Huberman's research and his podcast on alcohol, and a few other various sources. But what I've done here is condense the most important ones in my eyes to be aware of. So let's kick it off with, and I have written down a couple of these points because obviously I couldn't remember them all off by heart. I'm not that clever. So, okay, we'll start with the brain. Now, chronic alcohol intake, even at low to moderate levels, so low to moderate levels is 1 to 2 drinks per day or 7 to 14 per week. Gosh, I used to have 14 on one night. That's nuts. Can disrupt the brain, so a suppression of neurons in the prefrontal cortex, which is the area responsible for thinking and planning and these and impulsive behavior. So chronic alcohol intake can suppress all of that, and it has a very strong effect in suppressing the neural networks of memory formation and storage. That's why we forget what happens when we drink a lot of alcohol. High levels of alcohol consumption, so 12 to 24 drinks per week, absolutely cause degeneration of neurons, specifically the neocortex. People who regularly drink 1 to 2 nights per week experience changes in the neural circuitry of the prefrontal cortex, even when not drinking. This is because of an increase in the number of synapses in the connection that control habitual behavior, and a reduction in synapses that control behavior. But neurocircuits can be modified back to their original state with 2 to 6 months of abstinence in most casual social drinkers. Those with chronic substance abuse may have long-lasting effects, and it may be irreversible. So if you did 2 to 6 months of not drinking and you're a casual drinker at the moment, so I'd probably say casual drinker is, let's say, 7 to 14 drinks per week, you can undo a lot of damage in 2 to 6 months of not drinking. Obviously, the more you've been drinking, the longer you would need to abstain. So you'd be looking more at the kind of 6 month end. But even 2 months of not drinking, can your body can do a lot of natural repair. So clearly, when it comes to the brain, excessive drinking is hugely damaging, but it can be reversed, which is encouraging for those of you thinking of quitting alcohol for that period of time. Okay, so that's the brain. So there are significant effects that happen on the brain with neurons and memory and thinking. And I think most of you probably know that. This one is interesting when it comes to serotonin. So serotonin is the hormone involved in mood and self-image and how we see ourselves. So when it comes to the effect of alcohol consumption on serotonin, when alcohol is converted, now this is a tricky word, converted to acetaldehyde, it disrupts mood circuitry, making people hyperactive. So you know when you first start drinking and it's this like early inhibition release, so you have those first few drinks and your mood is heightened and you get that buzz feeling until it plummets, and then your energized mood is suppressed and you lose alertness and arousal. And that's where, you know, when people have had too many drinks, they're very sloppy and they're not with it, which of course is why, you know, drinking and driving is an absolute no-go, because your senses are completely out the window. And also, fellas, if you're listening, that's why sometimes you might not be able to get it up after a few drinks. Alcohol also changes the relationship between the hypothalamus in the pituitary gland and adrenals, which maintains balance in what you see as stressful. And on that, the level of cortisol is increased substantially in people who regularly drink. So that's what I was talking about earlier, how your body is releasing this cortisol. So even if you have one drink a night, you will experience increases in cortisol release from the adrenal glands when not drinking. So you'll feel more stressed and more anxiety when not drinking. That's why people often experience anxiety after drinking too much, because their cortisol levels are much higher than usual. And like I said, they stay higher for up to 5 days after excessive drinking. That's where the irony lies. People drink to relax and unwind and de-stress. And although initially alcohol gives you that buzz, like I was talking about with your neurons and that release, enables you to feel relaxed in the first instance, alcohol actually causes you to feel more stressed in the long term. It's also a reason why people crave fatty or sugary foods the following day or days after, because what happens when your cortisol levels are high, often your blood sugar is low, and hence there's that desire to eat those fatty, sugary foods to get your blood sugar levels up. So just think about that. Next time you're feeling stressed, think about whether you want to turn to alcohol to kind of relieve that, because drinking lots of alcohol is actually going to make you more stressed for longer. And also with increased alcohol tolerance, you get less and less of the feel-good blip. Just like with anything, the more you have it, the more you need to then get back to that kind of original kind of feeling of the buzz. And instead of the feel-good blip, you get more of the pain signaling. So behaviorally, you then try and drink more to activate those dopamine and serotonin molecules again, which again is a reason why sometimes people drink alcohol and then they're hungover the next day and then they have another drink because they've got this pain signaling, and now they're trying to drink to instead activate the dopamine and serotonin that they got, you know, initially from drinking alcohol. And that's where you get into that habit of some people drinking every day, because it's that constant kind of numbing of the pain signaling and trying to activate the dopamine and the serotonin. Very interesting. Now we're going to go on to sleep. Sleep's a massive one with alcohol and also the hangover. So this is the kind of the day after drinking symptoms. Now, sleep after even one drink is not the same quality as without alcohol. When alcohol is present in the bloodstream, the architecture of sleep is disrupted. And that's why, although you may think you've slept well after drinking, you haven't had quality sleep, because your body is so busy trying to break down the alcohol and basically working overtime to do so. And this can happen even after just one or two drinks. So just on that, what's happening inside your body when you're asleep is a disrupted gut microbiome. So alcohol has a big impact on your gut microbiome, where it's indiscriminately killing bacteria and healthy gut microbiota, which may ultimately cause something called a leaky gut. Sounds gross, sounds horrible. Now, the good thing is gut microbiome can be replenished with 2 to 4 servings of low fermented food, such as your kimchis, your kefirs, you know, those kinds of things. So it can be reversed, but alcohol really does impact your gut. And obviously, there's a lot of research coming forward now of how your gut can affect your mood and why it's important to try and maintain a healthy gut. So definitely something to be aware of. Now the headaches, we can all relate to this. The headaches after a bad night of drinking. Oh God, I've had some terrible headaches. And these are actually caused, a lot of people say it's dehydration, all of that. It's not. They're actually caused by vasoconstriction. So alcohol induces vasodilation initially. So vasodilation obviously is when your kind of blood circuits are kind of opening up, so dilating to allow more blood flow. But then when it wears off, it induces vasoconstriction. So then everything closes up, and basically blood, it's harder for blood to go around the body. Now on this, and you have to be careful when you take NSAIDs, so anti-inflammatories or painkillers. I know some of you will probably, you know, pop some paracetamol or ibuprofen after a night out of drinking. Just be careful doing that, because your liver is already taking a big beating from the alcohol. And to be honest, it's difficult to really do anything to avoid the inevitable headache. It's a process that's going in your body that even, you know, anti-inflammatories can't really do much to kind of stop. Now, drinking more alcohol will alleviate a hangover. Again, like I said just before, some people will continue drinking on a hangover to kind of lessen the damage. But by doing that, an even worse hangover will ensue at some point whenever you stop drinking. So I would say that's a bad idea too. One thing that is good for a hangover is deliberate cold exposure, because this increases something called epinephrine. I think that's how you say it, epinephrine, epinephrine. Oh, this is with C-ware. Like, I'm not a scientist, but it's an interesting word. Anyway, and that may help with alcohol clearance in the brain and bloodstream. So a cold shower or a cold plunge can actually slightly reduce your hangover, because this increases something called epinephrine, which may help with alcohol clearance in the brain and bloodstream. So a cold shower or plunge. Important note on this though, alcohol does lower core body temperature. So be careful if you've been drinking, because your temperature regulation will be off. So try not to do any cold plunges when you're pissed, basically, you know, because that can be dangerous. Alcohol is a diuretic, so make sure you have plenty of electrolytes. Even if you just had, you know, 1 to 2 drinks the night before, the night of drinking, try and have 1 to 2 glasses of water for every alcoholic beverage. That will help the day after a lot. Another thing that's important, and again, there's been a lot of myths around this, but your drink selection does matter. And it's not because of the sugar content, it's the congeners in there, so the nitrates and other ingredients. Beer is least likely to cause a hangover. On the other end of the spectrum, brandy is at the very top of the list. So you're kind of lowest to highest in terms of alcohols that, you know, are less likely to give you a hangover to the ones that are the most. So you've got beer at the very bottom, and then tequila, vodka, gin, then you've got your white wine, then your whiskey, and then your rum, then your red wine, then your brandy. Brandy's at the top, red wine and brandy at the top. So if you want to drink and reduce the severity of the hangover, beer and tequila or vodka, maybe gin are your go-tos, with red wine and brandy causing the worst hangovers. But in general, there's no magic cure for hangovers. You've just got to endure them. I'm personally surprised there's no pill that's been invented by the big farmers, because actually, yeah, God, like, why is there not a hangover pill? Imagine if people knew they wouldn't get hangovers. They'd probably drink more alcohol, right? Alcohol companies would make more money. The alcohol companies could then partner with the big farmers, and it would be one nice big money-making scheme, which I'm sure the government would jump in on too. So, you know, it'd be like alcohol making you ill, and then the big farmers curing you with a hangover pill. Classic. I mean, they do that already with a lot of other companies and products, so I don't know why they don't do it with alcohol. Anyway, just a side thought. So finishing off the scientific side of things and the effects of alcohol. One stat that was particularly scary, and this is more for women, is the risk of breast cancer increases among women who drink. For every 10 grams of alcohol consumed per day, there's a 4-13% increase in the risk of cancer, because alcohol increases tumor growth and suppresses molecules that inhibit tumor growth. So ladies, I would just be mindful of this. And that's pretty much the kind of rundown of the key stats. I mean, the ones that certainly stood out for me, and probably, I think the reason why I picked those out, they're the most relatable to you in terms of the different things going on inside of our bodies when drinking and after drinking alcohol. So take them as you will. Like I said, I'm not here to tell you what to do and what not to do. I do find it incredibly interesting, however, that, you know, alcohol is a known toxin to the cells of the body, and that based on the center of massive literature on alcohol consumption, no consumption or 0 ounces of alcohol is going to be better for your health than low to moderate consumption of alcohol. And that low to moderate consumption of alcohol is going to be better for you, of course, than moderately high to high alcohol consumption, on the order of 12 to 24 drinks per week or more per week. So that's the kind of the high levels. I realize that for most people listening to this, it's probably low to moderate alcohol consumption that is part of their standard routine, and I'm not here to give you justification for doing that, nor am I going to tell you not to do that. I think what is important is to at least consider the negative effects that I've run through today, especially those on the brain, the gut microbiome, and stress levels. I don't personally think there are certainly better ways to deal with stress out there than drinking alcohol, and I would highly encourage you to explore those other ways. Any measures you use to offset some of the negative effects of any alcohol consumption is going to be beneficial to you, and those measures or tools are going to be obviously health promoting. Exercise, eating a healthy diet, prioritizing good sleep, for example, these can be really good stress relievers. I've seen firsthand the benefits of significantly reducing alcohol in my life to my well-being and my mood, my mindset, my physical health. I've seen the benefits of it with my clients, those who have had to reduce, not had to, but I've highly recommended reducing alcohol just from a weight loss perspective, because as we know, alcohol has empty calories. Your body doesn't break the calories down like it does with other calories from other sources, because there is no nutrition in alcohol, and therefore it's much harder for your body to break down those calories when they're in your body, which is why if you're drinking lots of alcohol, it makes it significantly harder to lose weight, because your body is not actually getting into the fat burn to lose and to drop your body fat. It's having to fight through essentially this layer of alcohol. That wasn't very technical, but I'm not going to get into the science of it because it's not that exciting. But that's pretty much the crux of it. Some people just can't do it. They can't reduce their consumption, and that's fine. Like, that's on them. I will never tell my clients they need to stop drinking alcohol completely. No way. That's not my decision. It's not my style of coaching. What people consume is ultimately up to them. But of course, from what I know as a fitness professional, I will always encourage my clients and other people to reduce alcohol consumption. Not just if they're on a weight loss journey, but for their own health, for their own health promotion. I have had clients who have obtained the most amazing results and are incredibly happy with their lives and do drink, you know, 4, 5, 6 drinks a week. And that's okay too. Again, I'm not the party pooper here. I'm not the alcohol police. I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm just making you aware of the benefits of reducing alcohol and also perhaps the negatives of drinking a lot of alcohol. To wrap this up, this has been, I've loved talking about this and I hope you have too, but to wrap this up, one thing I do want to bring to light is actually like how prevalent alcohol is in our society today and how you only truly realize this when you stop drinking it as much. It's everywhere. The vast majority of people are drinking it regularly. At least that's what I see. And I always think if alcohol got introduced into our world today, it would be a class A drug, without a doubt. I remember reading a stat when I was doing some of this research about the amount of hospitalizations that happen because of alcohol, domestic abuse, violence, arrests caused by alcohol. It's insane. But there is so much money pumped into alcohol and the industry, and there is so much of society that almost depends on it to live. It's crazy. And actually, come to think of it, I would love to know how much money... Actually, would I? I was going to say, I'd love to know how much money I've spent on alcohol in my lifetime. I think I would have a panic. I'd probably pass out. I would be disgusted if I knew how much money I spent on alcohol. It'd be offensive. And I'd probably be quite embarrassed, actually, and slightly ashamed of myself. So actually, maybe that was a bad thought. I don't want to know how much I've spent on it in my lifetime. But... you know, with that, a part of me is like, okay, cool, yeah. You know, I have spent a lot of money on alcohol, but I've had some of the best nights of my life and some amazing experiences celebrating with friends. And granted, you know, I don't regret a single one of those things. Obviously, there's things that I've done on alcohol, as I'm sure you have listening today, that you regret. But there's no point regretting those things now, is there? Yeah, going back to the prevalence of alcohol, I think for me, and this is my final point on it before I do wrap this podcast up, it's just, I think it's how much it casually plays a role in people's lives. And I'm not talking about the going out and binge drinking alcohol on the weekends, although that is also very common in society. I'm more talking about the casual glass of wine with dinner, the beer on the beach, watching the sunset, you know, the drinks whilst watching a sporting fixture at home or in a stadium. And again, no one bats an eyelid when it comes to doing this. But in my mind, that's because alcohol is so ingrained in our society and it's normal to do. And you're considered abnormal if you don't. And now when I turn up to seeing friends at the pub, or I'm watching a sports game with friends out or at home, or having a casual dinner with my family, and they offer up an alcoholic drink and I say no, and everyone around me says yes, I feel like the odd one out. Like, there is still that feeling that you know, I'm doing something that people are finding strange. But I'm really enjoying being sober curious, and I think that's the word that I want to finish this podcast off with and leave with you, is just maybe be more sober curious, because I honestly believe so many people, lots of you listening today, could massively benefit from just being a bit more sober curious and seeing how much of a positive impact it could have on your life. There's a small part of me that thinks in 50 years time, people will look back and say, why on earth did people drink alcohol back then? That is a crazy concept. Who knows? I don't know. That's just a thought, something to think about. But yeah, just being more sober curious is I guess what I would at least encourage for you. I mean, you can also take this and think, nah, not me, it's not happening. But again, I'm not here to tell you what you can and can't do. But thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you found it interesting, to say the least. And like I said, I hope it's going to give you some thoughts. Just go away and think about and just open up your eyes to a bit. It's good to be back in the podcast seat. If you like this episode, please give my podcast a 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple Music or wherever you're listening. And if you're new to this podcast, maybe you haven't listened to any of them before, I do have 23 other episodes that, you know, could potentially change your mind and open up your eyes to a lot of other topics. But yeah, thanks for listening. And I do have to obviously give a final plug. If you are interested, you know, in losing weight and you're struggling with alcohol and your diet and you're wanting to improve that, of course, you know, you can head to my website, www.james-middleton.co.uk, and fill out your details there. And I will be in touch with you ASAP to discuss how we can potentially work together. But that's it from me. Look after yourself, and I will see you at the next episode.